Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bethany Gilbert, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Cormdale Church and Pastor Chris Hemelman of First City Church. And special guest, Adrian Fossey.
Hello.
On Wednesdays, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life, and today we're talking about romanticy.
We'll get to that if you don't know what that word means in just a minute. First of all, Bethany, so great to have you back on the podcast.
Back.
We are so excited.
She back.
Yes. Bethany is like the most beloved member of this podcast for most listeners.
The people demanded she be back. And she listened.
Really nice.
Bethany left this podcast like a year and a half ago?
We've barely made it. We've been hanging on by a thread.
I was going to say, we've sort of been just like sort of trying to nudge this thing along and keep it going.
And now Bethany, we're not sure what I'm going to do if Bethany's back.
Bethany and her husband moved into the neighborhood. You're literally around the corner.
Yeah, I'm like two blocks away.
And I just said, hey, could you like figure out a way to come back on the podcast? And I'm so glad you did. So Bethany will be hosting twice a month.
Mm-hmm.
So every other podcast or two podcasts out of four, I guess. And then I guess, Dusty, you'll have to do the intro for the others.
I suppose.
Really? Yeah, I was listening.
B team.
I was listening and I was just jealous of the snacks and I wanted to come back.
Speaking of, Adrian is not only our guest for this podcast, but also as a guest provided probably the most epic snack we've had this year. Would you want to explain, Adrian, you're like on this personal crusade to...
To
master the chocolate cake.
Yes. So one of my 2025 goals is to bake the perfect chocolate cake and then have that recipe in my repertoire. So I've been trying out different recipes, and this one is a dark chocolate cake with espresso powder and a Swiss meringue buttercream.
And wow. I got to say, it's definitely,
I don't know if I'm going to have a better one.
Ain't nothing wrong with this chocolate
cake. We are happy about your goals for 2025. We're happy to be your lab rats.
Thank you.
Anytime.
Thank you. I find I'm way more... motivated on a goal if it's food related. So, well, you know,
we've obviously already eaten half the chocolate cake before we even turned on the microphones. So here we are. Let me read to you from a few excerpts from an article, February 28th, 2025 at the Gospel Coalition by Catherine Butler, who is an author and book reviewer. This will tee up the topic that we're going to talk about today. Around midnight on January 21st, 2025, bookstores across the United States experienced crowds they'd not seen since the days of Harry Potter. Customers lined up outside storefronts by the hundreds to snatch up a hotly anticipated fantasy title the moment it hit bookshelves. The fervor was so intense that some shops charged admission. As in the days of Harry Potter, many fans arrived in costume to celebrate their favorite characters. Unlike in the Hogwarts mania of the 90s, however, most attendees were women. Their costumes often included leather bodysuits, and the book in question featured not only dragons and a magical realm, but also explicit sex scenes.
Feels like something I should not attend.
This probably isn't your primary genre.
You're not the vibe.
You're not the target audience, Dusty. Yeah. The article goes on to say the title that sparked so much excitement was Rebecca Yarros. Is it Yarros? Yarros?
Yarros.
Rebecca Yarros's Onyx Storm, the third book in the Empyrean series of novels within the romanticy subgenre. Romanticy.
It's the first time I heard this word.
This
was
is a
today.
Word. This was, word feels to me like ex-evangelical. It's just a word I just struggle to say.
Three minutes ago, I learned this word exists.
I would also like to play, like we could have played the game of like, is it a romanticy novel or is it an Axe body spray flavor?
Yes.
Like
kind of, Onyx Storm could
Onyx
be
Storm.
A teenage boy.
It could be an Axe body
teenage
spray.
Body spray.
Onyx Storm.
Romanticy blends the tropes of romance with the imaginative world building of fantasy, creating novels described as The Bachelor meets The Hunger Games. Okay.
Interesting.
Onyx Storm, remember this book came out January 21st of this year, sold 2.7 million copies in its first week, breaking a 20-year sales record. That's a lot of people reading this book. The article goes on to say social media has played a pivotal role in romanticy's surging popularity. In the months following the release of Yarros' first Empyrean book in 2023, fan videos on BookTok attracted more than 1 billion views. That's a lot of views. And by the way, apparently BookTok is a thing. This is like TikTok, but for books.
Yes.
And then when I was talking to Bethany off the mic, she said there's also Bookstagrams, which are Instagrams for books.
Yep.
Like a separate account.
There's big communities out there surrounding.
I did not.
Books.
There's whole subcultures I don't even know anything about. Now, here's where the article turns into a direction that we sort of want to talk about here. Oh, by the way, the subtitle of this little section is Watch Out for Spice. The erotic content in Romantasy poses the greatest concern for Christians. While euphemistically labeled spice, these scenes are often explicit. The graphic sex scenes are multiple pages long and describe the sex in such detail that readers will get a full anatomy course by the end. As 82% of romance readers are women, the soaring popularity of spicy Romantasy has implications for the sisters, daughters, and mothers who sit beside us in church. And that's what we want to talk about here, is the implications of this for our friends who are Christians, who are reading these novels and who are part of our church. And I think this was on your radar, Adrian, because you're like hanging out with folks who are reading these books. I am not so much.
Yeah. I will say, like, if you go back and look at the email that I sent to the podcast team, I think it was on January 22nd, like the day after, because I saw on my Instagram feed, and also like there are various like Slack channels that I belong to at work. And I mean, the anticipation around this was wild. And I am someone who loves to read. I read about a book every week or book and a half every week and a half. And I had known, like, I know people well enough to know, is this someone that I'm going to like be on the same page with as far as books that we like, or, you know, other people I've tried reading the stuff that they like, and I'm like, that's not my jam. So I had avoided even reading these books for a long time because I had a feeling that it was not going to be up my alley. But I do like I've gotten more into sci-fi and fantasy, again, trying to expand my reading genres, and was pleasantly surprised with some of the sci-fi that I had read. So I thought maybe this will be something that I'm into. And I read probably 1/4 of Fourth Wing, which is the first book in the series, and got to a point where, one, the writing was terrible. It was some of the worst writing that I've read in a while. The dialogue was horrific. And then got into these very graphic sex scenes and knew that wisdom for me was like, I got to shut this. Like, this is not wise. And also, like, why, if the story's not even good, why would I spend more time on it and also have this like weird temptation around sexual stuff? And like, probably the most graphic sex scenes that I've ever come across in literature. And I've read a lot. And, you know, again, there's times that I know what a book's content is and I will purposely avoid it. But the thing that was even more concerning, so like, I knew firsthand what Rebecca Yarros was writing about and what she was aiming at her books, which is these like very blatant graphic sexual scenes surrounded by some weird stuff about dragons. Basically, like, that's it summed up. And then I would see these women that I have been in church with, that I've been in Bible studies with, that I would consider sisters in Christ. And not only were they like just like casually adding this to their like red list on Goodreads, because I spent a lot of time on Goodreads, but they were like, I am so excited. People were taking the day off of work to read this new book. And it was messing with me in a lot of ways, because I'm like, hey, I know what this is like, what's in here. And you're not only like admitting that you read it, but you are bragging about it. You are like, this is the thing that I want to be known for, is reading these kind of books. And it honestly like just concerned me a lot as someone who cares a ton about these women and about, you know, what we're doing for shepherding women in our church. I'm like, I feel like we need to talk about this and like call a spade in some cases. And also what I really wanted to hear from you guys is, hey, from a pastoral perspective, what have you seen? What are some of the pitfalls that you see with this kind of escapism, both for people, married people, and also single Pringles like myself? Yeah, what kind of effects do we see of these sort of books and like engaging with this kind of fantasy sexualized situations long term?
Yeah, because my guess is, and sorry, this is going to sound like a silly question, but that these books are not being purchased because everyone loves to read about dragons.
No. If anyone says that they are in this for the plot, I'm just going to call.
You're not buying it.
No, because as I said, there is some interesting stuff that she does with, you know, what that article talked about of like the creation of worlds. There is A little bit, but the plot line is basically like, how can these two people get together? And then, oh, their parents are standing in their way. But then it's all, every single, you know, lead up point and epic point is a sexual interaction. Yeah. Like that's what, yeah. And I just, I think we got to put that on the table that if you're saying you're reading this for the story, there are so many other fantasy books that you could read.
Yeah, exactly.
That do not involve this. So Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for putting this on the radar as a topic, because this is one of those places where obviously I'm not reading these books and I didn't know that they were out there. And so when you said, hey, I think we need to talk about this, it's really helpful. This is why we have the email address podcast@cedarmile.com and why we say, hey, you know what? You send us a topic, we'll probably talk about it. So thanks for being our guest to sort of chop this up together.
Yeah, I will say sending an email to my pastors with the phrase dragon porn and it was not on my 2025 bingo card.
There you go.
But here we are.
Awesome for doing it.
It's here.
And I want to commend you as well. You and I have talked about this particular sin and just the reality of sexual sin for over a decade now. And I just want to commend your courage, because I think it takes a lot to say, hey, this is like a thing that's culturally acceptable, but in the church, we don't really know how to talk about it. And especially women don't know how to address it. And so I commend your courage for surfacing the topic and saying, hey guys, I think we should probably circle the wagons here.
Yeah.
So thank you.
You're welcome.
I want to read a little more from the article. So I think there's two categories of folks here. There's some, like you mentioned, Adrian, there's some people who are just like, they're reading these and they're like, cool, I love this literature. The other
literature is a stretch.
Fair enough. The other category this article mentions is there's also, you know, these books are often marketed as young adult novels. And so there's also teenage girls in our church who are finding out about these from Instagram or whatever. And parents aren't, you know, the cover of the book looks like a fantasy novel.
Yep.
You don't know that it's erotica, you know? And so this, this article says, this is a woman quoted in the article, Marion Jacobs. She says, I've been warning parents for years about the young adult novel market. There are very, very few secular authors that write without using sensuality in young adult books. If a teen is avidly reading secular young adult novels, I guarantee they are reading softcore porn and their parents may have no idea. So I think that's also an important thing to put on the table in a church family, is just to say, yeah, we want parents to be aware of like, hey, you should actually care what your kids are reading. As they're loving reading. Reading is generally a good discipline. We want to commend it. I'd rather have folks reading words on a page than, you know, scrolling on screens usually. But this is a place where we need to do some thinking.
And that's where my naivety went right away, was I was like, man, usually if you're reading a book, that's commendable, right?
Yeah.
Like almost any book is commendable.
And I think that's also like where I've seen, I would say specifically over the last 5 years, a shift in women of Bethany and I's age, elder millennials, if you will. Where, again, like just the amount of people that I know that are really actively reading, women, I should say, that I know that are actively reading has exploded. The amount of, you know, book clubs and things that I'm getting invited to, like reading, I think people realize the kind of detrimental effects of a lot of screen time and thought, hey, this is another way. So again, want to commend that. And that's a really good thing. However, I will say like, I am honestly like bummed that this is the direction that so many women that we know have chosen to focus that energy is in this kind of novel, because there's so much good to read out there.
Yeah.
And it bums me out that we are settling for like the least common denominator in, again, literature is a stretch in my mind. But yeah, I will say again, having read 200 pages of her, you can definitely tell that Yaros is a YA author. Again, not much development there. It is not a lot of thought. And I was talking to a girl at work actually about this series, and I just said, you know, hey, yeah, like it's just not good for me to engage my mind in that way. So like I chose not to continue reading this stuff. And she said, oh, I just read this stuff to turn my brain off. And I was like, how do you read to turn your brain off? I don't know. But apparently that's a whole thing too.
Which is interesting, because I think one of the ways that it's become culturally acceptable is because it is literature, and the target towards women makes a lot of sense, because it has to pull me in emotionally to move towards arousal, which is where, in talking with another friend about this, she said, if my husband was just like laying in bed scrolling through pornography, that would be a problem. Right. And we all kind of know that's a bad idea. Like every marriage would be like, well, let's just not do that. You know, you wouldn't even have to be a Christian to know that that is bad. And her point was, if I was in bed next to him reading this book or a book in this genre, that would be a problem, or it should be a problem, but it's kind of not.
It's right truly now. Like a hiding in plain sight thing. Like you said, it would be very weird. And that was what I compared it to, was like, hey, you're like declaring to your Instagram followers that you're going to spend 12 hours reading porn. That is such a strange thing for me to be like, I'm proud of this. Look, guys, like, but there is also like, to what you were saying, Bethany, earlier, of like a communal thing. It is a huge rallying cry around these like communities of women, and often, like I said, Christian women that I know that are extremely drawn into this online community of women who are reading these same kind of books.
You use the term escapism. Can you talk more about that? Like, what's going on? Or maybe another way to ask it is, what's the attraction here? Like, why are so many women attracted to these kinds of books?
Honestly, I think for a lot of the same reasons that men, you know, traditionally have been drawn to porn, I would say men and women, but it's the idea that you can engage in a kind of mental relationship, or, you know, like fantasy relationship with a character. Cause like, again, these girl, like women that I know will call them like their book boyfriends. So it's this idea that like you have this emotional attachment to a relationship without having to actually give any relational equity to that. Like, right. Like you don't have to see that character on their bad days, or, you know, deal with who's taking out the garbage or anything like that. And for single women, you don't get any, you know, like you don't have anywhere to engage that generally. And so you're like, hey, this is a way that I can kind of experience a lot of the things alongside this author of, you know, falling in love, or, you know, having this really like connection with someone. And especially like it, with it tied to fantasy, like the fantasy genre too, it takes women completely out of their like mundane, normal lives of, hey, I go, like for me, it's like, I go to work, I come home, I make dinner, I, you know, do these things. And this is like a totally different world that I can engage in. And that's why I think good fantasy, like we love it, right? Like I love a good, like, hey, this is a different world that I can engage my imagination in. But I think a lot of it is also that relational piece of, hey, I can engage in a relationship that I don't actually have to deal with any of the bad parts of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you think of like an example, like Lord of the Rings is kind of like the high fantasy.
We're all thinking sort of Tolkien, pinnacle. Let's
yeah,
just
yeah,
say
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly.
We're all. I was trying to think of another example of like, it's a Harry Potter or Lord of the Rings. Like those are my two.
That's it. I mean, that's a reference. But I mean, I think even to Harry Potter too, to lesser degree, because, you know, Tolkien's the apex, but what those fantasy stories do, they elevate nobility and goodness. And yeah, there's darkness and evil, but the goodness is what gets elevated in virtue. And so escapism, there's a kind of escapism that's actually really good for our soul, because it's helping kind of elevate virtue in us and these themes of goodness. And so, but when you turn it to like what you're describing, then it becomes a very potent thing for very unhealthy things going on in our soul.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that I thought of was like, oh man, I'm going to come on this podcast and everyone's going to be like, Adrian, just like burning the books over there. Like, have I turned, like the full circle moment of like remembering when I read the Da Vinci Code, my grandma like sent me a pamphlet about why I shouldn't be reading the Da Vinci Code. And I'm like, oh boy, have I come full circle in 20 years and now I'm this person. But I think one of the things that I really like want to emphasize is like, I don't want to call people just out of something, but into something. Mm. And like, there is really good ways that we can engage the Christian imagination. And also, I think like we need to be thinking about the way that we interact with any kind of media or art, and like, what is our ethic there? Is it anything? Is it, you know, like, again, art gets kind of tricky because it's like, oh, it's objective. Maybe I enjoy a different type of book than you do, Bob. So then who are you to say that I can't read this type of book? But I think that there is something objective about both the writing and the content in these that we can say like, hey, let's take a stand about this.
Well, I want to read this article I'm reading. The author of it is herself a Christian fantasy writer, not erotica, but just fantasy. And she says at the end, romanticism is a genre that can be, and sometimes is, done well. the danger is not that this genre exists, but that readers need help finding the right books. So she's kind of getting at the same thing you are. Like, it's not that reading is bad or that even every book in this category is bad, but there's a deep need for discernment and probably for thinking about, yeah, how do we engage as Christians in these kinds of things? Cultural engagement, cultural artifacts that at some level, right, they can be neutral, they can be helpful, like you said, or they can be detrimental.
Yeah, and I think just the ability to not only engage on, like I said, the kind of clearly cut, hey, this is like too graphic, but also healthy critique of things. I think, again, I hate this phrase, but it's a very common one amongst women my age. It's like, I'm not going to yuck your yum. I'm not going to say, and so
wow,
what I've happens
never,
is like,
never heard that until right now.
We're learning all sorts of stuff
Man,
today.
I feel so old.
Yes. Ah. Also, this is just like corporate jargon. I'm like deep into corporate America too. And that's another thing. But it's this idea that like, we can't say that anything is objectively bad. Mm. And I'm like, I think we can. I think we can have courage to say, hey, this writing is objectively bad and we need to just not engage it.
That's good. And and you said moments ago, we need to redeem. I heard you basically say, I don't think you use this word, but basically we need redemption in our imagination.
Yes.
And we need to recapture it or something to that nature. And I think that is very true. I think if we let our imagination go wild, then it's without virtue and without some boundaries, right? And some limitation. And so I think having virtue and limitation with scripture laid over my imagination is very healthy and Christian.
I'm probably, to your point, guilty of getting old. I'm starting to be the old guy that yells at clouds. But I do think that the, you know, when we planted this church and you were on that journey with us, you know, years ago, I was really trying to, like, because so many of us have been raised in sort of like a fundamentalist way that was sort of like, don't, you know, if it's out there, just ignore it. Don't go to any R-rated movies and don't read any books and don't, you know, sort of like there was a separatism. Mm-hmm. And so we were trying to say, no, let's engage culture in a meaningful way. Let's be wise, you know, as we engage culture. But I also think, like, what we seem to have missed in, I was going to say our generation, but I'm much older than the rest of you. What I think we have lost is the ability to say, like, actually, some things are just bad.
Yeah.
Some things are just wrong. Like, you should just not do that. And I don't mean wrong like there's a verse about them. I just mean like Philippians 4:8 is what's coming to mind, right? Whatever's true, honorable, good, right? Let your mind dwell on these things. Like, that's a command in scripture. And so to the extent that anything, whether it's a movie, a book, a podcast, a website, whatever, to the extent that anything causes me to dwell on things that are not good, honorable, right, true, it's moving me away from what God wants for me. And I think I just appreciate the courage to say, okay, maybe we just need to say, hey, you know, these books are not good.
Yeah. I'm also just curious, you know, because again, I went through that swing of, you know, heavy fundamentalist.
Break the CDs.
Yes.
Stuff like that.
Focus on the family, you know, every feature films for families. I did all of those things and then went in, I would say, kind of entered my real walk with Jesus in the, kind of the height of, hey, we're doing away with all of that and, you know, we're going to set a new definition of, you know, what being a faithful Christian looks like. And I think we've lost the thread on wisdom somewhere along the way there. So I'd love like to hear what you guys like as pastors, because what I see is like the knee jerk reaction to this stuff is like, well, one, who are you to tell me? Who are you? I can engage with this in a healthy way, which, I mean, if you can, would love to know how, because I think at the, you know, fundamental core of just who we are, sinful humans, where does wisdom come into this of, hey, is it, you know, there's not a verse in the Bible that just says, like, don't read these books, but there's a lot of verses in the Bible about being wise.
Yeah. So another question I had, sorry, this is a little bit of a digression, but I'd love to hear, have you had conversations with ladies that there's a justification that these are words, not images, you know, like, hey, it's not visual pornography or visual sexually explicit stuff, but it's word created in words. And so therefore I can control it, or I can have you, are there justifications around that? Maybe from more like kind of Christian angle as well. Cause that's something I want to talk about here because I have heard that, not necessarily with this genre, but in other things where there's a justification for words on a page and there's different than images. And so I can do more, you know, get away with more on that. So I don't know, has that played out at all?
So I will say, when I have engaged fellow Christian women on this particular topic, the first thing is I'm in it for the story. Like, I just love the story.
Which you don't buy. Doesn't sound like you buy it.
Nope. I'm like,
do you also, I feel like, particularly with Christian women, kind of, they like either view these books, they're like, it's a guilty pleasure.
Yes,
like
100%.
It's a guilty pleasure read. Like, it's like, it's a guilty
too much chocolate
pleasure.
Cake.
Yeah. And it's very much like I think it's the reason, and, you know, I had these same feelings of like, there is media that I engage with that has like sexual scenes in it or whatnot. And, you know, so it's like, well, I know that you're watching this or whatnot. And, you know, it's the plank and, you know, spec situation there where you're like, but I do think that, again, it's the idea of like, I'm reading. How can this be bad if I'm reading? Like, this is a good thing. And yeah, I'm in it for a story. And then honestly, like, not a lot of willingness to engage beyond that. They'll just be like, I love them. Done. And like, you know what? And I will say it's been particularly challenging for me because I would say 95% of my friends are married. And so for me to be like, hey, I don't think this is like probably healthy for you, like with your sex life, with your husband, but I don't know what that looks like.
I was going to say, I think that's like the other thing is then like, I think maybe a lot of women who are married are like, well, I'm married. Like, it's okay. Because I'm married.
Yes. That.
And you're like, as a single woman, you're like, if I were married, I still don't think this would be okay.
No. And that was like, honestly, part of my impetus for writing the email, because I'm like, you guys have probably seen this play out in ways that I have not, in terms of, hey, if either partner is engaged in a robust fantasy life that is outside of the marriage, you know, relationship, bed, whatever you want to call it, what does that do? And what effects have you seen?
Yeah.
Only destructive ones, you know, would be my answer.
You raise a really good question with the wisdom piece that I think you're spot on too, is that one of the negative outcomes of the pushback against maybe purity culture and the fundy of, I mean, you're not that much older than me. You're like 5 years older than me. Anyway,
you're also really not that much older. Yeah. I remember you in high school. So like, I know that age, Fred.
Thank you.
So that in that pushback that, yeah, wisdom stopped being this category of, and stopped asking the question of, is this good for my soul? Is this, who is this forming me into?
Yeah. I think what that did to us is we were asking, is it sin? Like, that's where we're pushing. We're always like, is it sin? Is it sinful? Is it sinful? But we never say, is it wise?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And so to just take a step back and ask the question in the self-awareness, and there may be even some aspect of it that you're not aware of and you need to be aware of, not because it's not there, but just you haven't spent time to think about that. So I think one of the fears that I would have too is the effect that this has, that there are probably women that aren't even aware yet.
Yeah.
And how to kind of even press in some ways to get to that self-awareness is probably going to be hard conversations in some ways.
I think of it as like, you know, like you're reading, it's like you're taking a diet, and some books are kind of like the meat and potatoes. Like, you know, they're going to do more like the heavy lifting. They're going to, I don't know, be better written, be really intense, or have like really powerful stories or whatever, make you do more intellectually. And then you have books that I would also say are like candy or dessert. And it's like, well, if you're only eating the candy or the dessert, like whatever you're putting in your body, it's like, that's what you're going to get out of your body. But like thinking the same way of like what I'm consuming, what kind of entertainment I'm consuming, is that's forming me in some way, whether you're aware of it or not.
Yeah. And I think, you know, in my prediction is that 10 years from now, you guys especially are going to see the effects of this in counseling sessions, in really like challenging marriage situations, of, And that was like one of the reasons that I felt like an urgency to talk about this topic is because I care deeply about my friends who are married and I want to see them flourish. And I also want to see young women come up with like a healthy idea of, hey, this is how I can engage imagination and art and things like that in a healthy way, in a way that is still like honoring to God. And this is where it might, you know, be both unhealthy and unwise. And so, yeah, my like kind of prediction in a pretty cynical way is like, we're going to see the downstream effects of this soon.
Well, you've named two things that I think are such baseline biblical categories. One is this honoring to God? And two is this wise? And the thing you said a minute ago about, we've only asked, is this sinful? But we haven't asked, is it wise? I think that's the thing. Mm-hmm. For if I ask, even in almost any category, not just consumption of media or art, but even like if I think about parenting and I think like, who are the parents who raise kids that I think these kids are well set for the world? It's the ones who don't just ask, how do I give my kid the right answer? But also, how do I help this child develop wisdom? Like, how do I help them learn? These kids are just kids you shouldn't hang out with, right? And so I think as Christians, just that category of wisdom is foundational to a Christian ethic. Mm-hmm. And if the idea of ethics does not include for us the category of wisdom,
we've missed it.
We're missing something very significant about Scripture.
And I think that more and more it's becoming a uniquely Christian ethic. Like when I engage with my non-Christian friends about these topics, because I have, I'm in a book club at work and we make a selection, you know, each month. And I've said like, I'm not reading, you know, and when I engage on the factor of like, hey, I just feel like it's unwise for me to engage with this. Like there is no argument because people are not thinking of things in those categories of like wise and unwise.
What kind of pushback, like how do your coworkers respond to that? Are they like, you're an alien, you're crazy, you're the only one? Or is it respected?
I think generally it's respected. I had like a long conversation with a coworker who I was telling that I was going to record this podcast with. And again, the focus on self is very, so like a lot of it is this like reassurance of like, well, you got to do what's good for you. You know what's good for you. And I was like, yes, but I said, you know, as a Christian, I'm also thinking about what's good for us as a community and as a society. And I was like, I don't feel like this is good for us as a society either. And yeah, I mean, she didn't have a ton to say to that. But again, it's a lot of like, good for you, Adrian, like that you're like self-aware enough about this stuff. And some of them, like it was, you know, other parts of them I know are like probably talking about me behind my back and are like, that girl, whatever.
I want to read Philippians 4:8 because I do think it's such a helpful verse in these kinds of ethical questions. Finally, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. Or some translations say, let your mind dwell on these things. And I think that text just gives us a helpful set of words, true, honorable, just, pure, lovely, commendable. Those are such interesting things to think through. They're so different than asking, is there a Bible verse about me reading this book, right? But if I were to say, like, is what's in this book commendable? Apparently it is for some people because putting it on their Instagram.
Yes, but. And I'm like, if you have an argument for why this is commendable, like, I would love to hear it.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. far, I have not, and I don't think you have either, Bethany.
No.
Because we've talked about this before.
Yeah, and what you're not saying is that, hey, the only alternative then is the, you know, feature films for families kind of thing, like that there can't be, you know, things that are commendable that have showing darkness or things that have even sexual situations or violence. Like there is a kind of literature or media that has these things present but isn't dishonoring to God or doesn't have this sense of like, hey, what this is leading my soul to is what is commendable. So it's not like sanitizing the world at all.
And it's also not like we have to find an alternative for every single thing. Like I would say like two of the best books that I read last year, one of them is Demon Copperhead by Barbara Kingsolver, which is about the opioid crisis. It's a dark book. Mm. Like it's rough material, but it's beautifully written. It's redemptive. Mm-hmm. but you know, it doesn't shy away because like that is her reality. She's from Kentucky and like, you know, is in the midst of it. And then another one that we read at the beginning of last year that we both really enjoyed was Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, which is about the rise of video games basically in like the 70s and 80s and video game designers at MIT in the 90s. And there were some sexual like situations in that one, but it was about so much more than that. Yeah. And so it's I want to engage on those things. And I think I can do so in a way that is healthy and because it's not the entire book, right? There was like a weird scene in Tomorrow and Tomorrow and that you're like, ew, this, but skip over that page and you're done with it. And it's about something way bigger. And I think we should be engaging with culture on those things, but I don't see a redeemable path to engaging with on culture with this stuff.
That's great. Adrian, thanks for raising this topic and thanks for inviting us to talk about it. And thanks for joining us on the podcast. I know when I got your email, I was like, well, my question is, will you come and talk about it with us? And so if you hadn't been here, this would not have been a fun topic to engage just because you've read the books and you're in the conversations. And so thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, thank you for listening in. We pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We love to hear from listeners, so if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send an email to podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.